What is that noise?
It's my sack of nuts.
Sorry, your what?
My sack of macadamia nuts I bought with me as a healthy snack.
Where do you get macadamia nuts from? Aren't they expensive and hard to come by?
They come from one of my favorite places in the world, South Africa, and they are sold through House of Macadamia.
That's incredible, but you go through all of that for nuts?
These are not just any nut. House of Macadamia offers a variety of flavors, including chocolate, coconut, and even a spicy flavor. They even have macadamia nut oil, snack bars, and spreads. Best of all, they're high in protein, they're vegan, they're paleo, and they're keto friendly.
Wow, what did you say the name of that company was again?
House of Macadamia. And best of all, Curve Mundial listeners can subscribe to my personalized box and try their subscription service and see what I'm raving about. Farmers in South Africa get a piece of the pie, macadamia nuts become more available, and you can taste and try different flavors and items. So just go to anchor.fm/curva-mundial and click on the link, which will take you right to my personalized box on House of Macadamia. Also, by ordering from Curva Mundial's special curated subscription box, you get 15% off and a free 4-pack of snack bars are also included.
That's great.
Even better, sales from Curva Mundial's curated House of Macadamia subscription service help fund this podcast. So really, everybody wins.
So all I have to do is go to anchor.fm/curva-mundial and click on the link, which will take me right to your personalized box on House of Macadamia?
Yep. It's that easy. Also, I didn't mention, but Curva Mundial's subscription box comes with free shipping.
Just by going to anchor.fm/curva-mundial and clicking the link, and I get all of this? Sounds like a one-of-a-kind snack and a one-of-a-kind deal to me. Are you a footballer that finds their feet slipping and sliding inside their boots during a match? If so, Curva Mundial has a great solution for you. We've partnered with Technogrip Socks to bring you an exclusive offer on their new Featherlite Grip Socks. Technogrip Socks are different because they provide breathable comfort and next-level grip, but without the annoying bumps or thick and spongy material of traditional grip socks. Designed for athletes seeking sleek performance, Technogrip Socks are specially engineered with a unique grip yarn knitted into key areas of the sock, providing superior control without the bulk. They're lightweight and moisture wicking with midsole compression, so your feet feel great in both practice and games. If you've been wearing grip socks, these are radically different and will take a little getting used to, but once you make the switch, you'll never look back. Head on over to technogrip.com. That's TEQNIGRIP.com and use code CURVA15 for 15% off your first order. Again, head to technogrip.com and use code CURVA15 for a 15% discount. You'll thank us later. Welcome to Curva Mundial.
Hello, and welcome to a special extra time episode of Curva Mundial. Extra time is when we bring back a guest from a previous season and catch up with them. As always, I'm your host, Sal Bono, and I'm joined by season two guest and one of my best mates, Mr. Frankie Maloney. Frankie is now a DJ with The Face Radio in Brooklyn and has just gotten back from the trip of a lifetime watching his beloved Liverpool beat Chelsea in the Carabao Cup and then finally got a chance to see the Reds at Anfield. So let's dive into all of this, shall we? Frankie, welcome back.
How's it going, mate? Good to be back.
So happy to have you on, and so happy to have you back. I've heard these stories in person, and they're so great that it's time to just share them with everyone else.
Absolutely.
I mean, you've had an incredible trip, and we're going to get to that shortly. But before we jump into that, and you got a chance to say goodbye to Jurgen Klopp on his farewell tour in person. Oh yeah, actually, Frankie's pulling out some swag here.
I bought everything. I went absolutely mental in the merch stalls and the markets of Liverpool. I got the Jurgen Klopp scarf, the t-shirt, the mug, you know.
As one does with these days, you know, these things, you have to. We're going to get to his legacy in a bit. But before we dive in, let's go with some music here. So now I want to first talk about the show on The Face Radio. How did that come about and what is The Face Radio and can people all around the world access it?
People all around the world can access it. Like most great things, out on the internet at the moment. You could go to www.thefaceradio.com. It's a radio station. It started in Brooklyn. It's a lot of DJs doing a lot of shows from all around the world now. I do mine from New Jersey remotely. Lots of Brooklyn DJs, lots of London DJs, lots of DJs out in Australia. I think there's a South African show. There's a couple in Canada. Very sort of, you know, it's called The Face Radio. You can imagine it's very soul and mod kind of orientated. I do every other Monday on The Face Radio, I do a show called The Bugle, which is kind of Indian alternative based. And the Mondays is generally a more kind of indie leaning day. And then a lot of the other days are kind of for the soul heads and like the funk heads and the disco freaks. They got it all covered.
It's a great station. I know we live in such a playlist driven world, but there is something about the novelty of having someone come on a microphone, tell you about a tune, tell you about a band, give you a little bit of history, feeling like why they love the artist or why they like this particular song or why they're particularly playing it. I know retro is always cool and it's always in fashion to go back in time, but I do feel like we have to go back in time to appreciate new things now. And again, the art of radio DJing, like what you're doing, is so incredible. And your show, as you mentioned, like it's indie, but it does have a mix of obviously Britpop, world music, jazz, psychedelic funk that I've heard, you know, it runs the gamut. But what's it like putting a show together? Because we've never had this much music before in our lifetime, and it's so accessible. So what's that like for you?
I guess it kind of makes things easier in that, like if I do with yourself and some other friends of mine, I'm constantly sharing bands I love with mates and vice versa. They're sending me stuff. So like I have an ongoing playlist of just stuff that lands on my lap all the way. So I do a show every 2 weeks and I'm getting stuff off Spotify and I'm playing stuff off YouTube as well. It's like downloading tracks and getting stuff off the band's band camps and basically getting 2 hours of worth of music together. It's not 2 hours of new music every week at all, every other week. Right. I usually go top heavy on the show with all the recommendations I've had and stuff I've found. You know, there's blogs and like stuff I follow as well, and you know, places that you get excited about seeing new music, new bands on tour. That always like puts a band back in my head. So I'm constantly got these lists of like, oh yeah, I'll play that on the show this coming week. I've got a backlog of stuff that still hasn't got played week after week. I'm like, you know, I'm stocked up, but new stuff. Like keeps coming up and keeps impressing me, and it's a good way to just constantly be listening to new music. I kind of fell in love with doing that again, like after maybe a bit of a lull in my. I was always into like finding the next, you know, new bands and stuff, and then there was probably a little bit of a lull in my life, I'd say in my early 30s, and it sparked again recently, and that has come with the show, doing the show, and now constantly trying to find new stuff.
Funny you mentioned that, because that's how I felt about when I started getting bands on this podcast. I didn't intend to have so many musical guests. Mm-hmm. I wanted to interview the musical guests that I've interviewed in the past, that I've always talked about football with, that I knew had a passion for it. And also artists that like I knew love football, but didn't want it when I was doing my music, right? Didn't want to talk about music, wanted to talk about something else. So it worked out that way. But now I want to know about the younger bands coming out of, you know, Scotland or Ireland or the UK and the rest of the UK rather, and even, you know, parts of Europe that I probably wouldn't, I might not listen to their tunes, but like, oh, cool, you're a Valencia fan. Let's chat. You know, so it's, and then you find that appreciation and you get that connection there. So it is funny though, because like what you're saying, it's so true. Like there was a point when I stopped my music writing in my mid 30s and I was like, oh, I'm good. I don't need to go out and seek things anymore. But then doing this project sort of made me now force me to seek things out, and I'm loving it.
Sparks out the love for it again. You know, maybe that's the golden age for dropping out of being interested in things. Like maybe it's a lull in your life where you're like, I've gone too hard on it for like so long, I need a break. And then, like anything, you've had a break and then it puts a fire in your belly again once you get back into it.
100%. There's also a bizarre appreciation then, not only just finding new bands that you love, and you know, obviously you and Travis and Warren, like you guys will send me recommendations, and those are all previous guests. You can just go and look on the playlist.
Friends of the podcast.
Friends of the podcast here. And we'll chat music as you mentioned. But it's what's interesting too is that I will then also find an appreciation of artists that I might not have given a chance to earlier on, like more established acts. So do you find yourself that happening too?
I do, yeah. And I'm always open to like our friend Travis sent me one the other week, and it was a band I never heard of from the 80s. I was like, this is brilliant. I'm gonna seek that one out. I'm gonna stick it on the radio show, you know.
Who was the band?
They were called The Clean. They were sort of a garage rock revival band from New Zealand. They sprung up on his algorithm and he sent them over to me. They're good. They're like one of those lost bands of the 80s, you know. Oh, they're probably on a Nuggets compilation somewhere. I get the best of everyone because everyone's sending me stuff, especially now they know I'm doing the show. I get my algorithm, like on Spotify, recommend me stuff, and I get everyone else's algorithm recommending them stuff and sending it to me as well, you know.
I love it. That's what's great though. And then we reap the benefits of your hard work here.
I cut the wheat from the chaff and put it all in 2 hours for everyone to listen to.
Yes. As you can tell, music is such a passion of Frankie's, but as is football. So you found a way to mix them together, and being a supporter of Liverpool and a massive Beatles fan, that all happens to go hand in hand. But your recent trip where you trekked across the pond, and despite Frankie's accent, as he mentioned earlier, is a proud New Jersey resident and an expat from England with Irish roots. But he recently had a whirlwind Liverpool tour, so he got to see the Fab Four statues of them and the legacy that they left behind in Liverpool. But what was that like entering that city for the first time to go and watch your team and go and watch something at Anfield, which I know has been something that you wanted to do since you were a little boy?
I was so excited about it, as you can imagine. It's a weird thing that I'd never made it up there. I lived in England till I was 30, huge Liverpool fan. I never made it up to Anfield, and I was almost feel a bit ashamed that I never did. But it was tough getting tickets for stuff back then. I don't want to make excuses for myself, but you had to know someone. There was no secondary market online and things like that. You know, it was hard. So when I was able to get a ticket for this game, I got a ticket for Liverpool v Luton at Anfield on a Wednesday night. It was very last minute. So just to rewind, I got... just to set the scene, actually, I was lucky enough, my brother was able, he works for a company that he had contacts with to get me tickets for the Carabao Cup final, which was Chelsea v Liverpool at Wembley on a Sunday. And I had that ticket in the bag and in the can. And I booked my flights to go over to visit England. And I was going on the Wednesday night till Monday. Tuesday night to Monday. And then Liverpool v Luton was meant to be the weekend where the Carabao Cup final was on. And because we got to the final, they had to scrap that game. And we just figured it would be like rescheduled at the arse end of the season, somewhere towards the end. But because of fixture congestion, they in the end, at the very last minute, changed it to the Wednesday night before the final. And I was like, well, hang on, I land in England at 7 a.m. on the Wednesday morning. If I get tickets for this, I can make it, you know, I can get there. So I did. I was lucky enough, I got tickets. I paid quite a bit of money for it, more than, you know, over the odds, but I got one. I essentially left my house in New Jersey in the good old United States on Tuesday afternoon and went straight from my house to Anfield.
Oh my God.
That was one of the longest via dropping stuff off at a hotel. That was the plan. I left. I got the train across the road from my house, train into the city, JFK, overnight flight to London Heathrow, landed. Luckily, I was stressed. Like, I was like, if anything goes wrong, like the plane's delayed, you know, I'm like everything could have a knock-on effect. Landed in Heathrow an hour early. So I was able to bomb it to Euston Station in London. Got on the train. Got on way earlier train than I was expecting to get from Euston. I got like a 9 a.m. train from Euston up to Lime Street in Liverpool. I got into Liverpool about noon. It was about 2 hours, I would say, 2.5 hours on the train, which I slept on. I got a good sleep on the train, bit of a sleep on the plane. So I'm at Lime Street, Liverpool. I go straight to the hotel I'm staying at, which was the Shankly Hotel, named after Liverpool's greatest ever manager. There's a parallel street across the road where there's a hotel called the Dixie Dean, which is the Everton fans, the traveling Everton.
Okay, well.
I was in the Shankly Hotel. Lovely place. I get there earlier than I can book in, as usual. You know, it's 3 o'clock booking, but I'm allowed to drop off my bags. So in a daze, I've got like 3 hours before I can come back in and maybe get a little bit of a sleep and a shower and everything before the game. The game's at 8 p.m., 7:30, I think it was actually. So in the 3 hours, I bomb it around Liverpool. I see all the statues. I go down Matthew Street where the Cavern is, see all the Beatles memorabilia. I go down to the docks where the Beatles statues are, get my photos there, the big building with the Live Birds. I think it's the Town Hall or the City Hall. With the Live Birds are there, which is the Liverpool club emblem. There's a statue of a singer called Billy Childish. Mm-hmm. Not Billy Childish, sorry. Statue of a singer called Billy Fury, who I made a documentary about probably about 15 years ago. And in the documentary, he was an old rock and roller. He was like, you know, one of England's many trying to be the English Elvis.
Okay.
He was good. He was very good. If you're into rock and roll, go and check out Billy Fury. But I wanted to see a statue because in the documentary I made about him, they were in the process of making the statue. And we did a whole scene about them trying to like design it and get the bust done and everything. So it was a good little pilgrimage to see him. Then I hit a bunch of spots that were old haunts of John Lennon. There was a pub, his local pub called Yay Crack, that I went in and had a pint in there.
Oh, because I saw you post a photo of that. I didn't realize that was his, and it's still around, which is incredible.
Yeah, it's still where all the arts. It's right behind the art college, and it's still where all the art school kids drink. It's a great, it's a great spot. Liverpool is a great town. Like you're just walking around, especially in the evening. The bars of all. I'll get to it later, right? I'll do it in chronological order, right? So there's another pub. There's another bar that was opposite there that I forget the name in, which was another old haunt of Lennon's. The name escapes me, but it was another incredible place. Okay. I make it back to the hotel. It's 3 o'clock by now, so I can go back. I check into the hotel room. I have like a half hour snooze. I'm worried that I'm going to sleep in. So I set a billion alarms to wake me up. Have a half hour snooze, have a shower. I get down and I'm ready to go up to Anfield, looking around for where to get the bus. I bump into an Irish family and they're also like the mum and dad and two kids. They're also looking for where to get the bus up to Anfield. And then we go, hey, look, there's a cab. Let's just jump in this cab and we'll go up. It's like £15 to go up to Anfield from City Centre in the cab. The cabbie looks like he could be Stephen Gerrard's cousin. He looks like him. He sounds like him. He's like incredible. We're driving up on the way up. He's getting his phone out and he's getting the team announcements and he's getting excited for the game. We get there, walk around the stadium, soak up some of the atmosphere and some of the bars around there. I think it was the King Billy I went into for a drink. Everyone's getting excited. Do a little round. So like it's in a very residential street, Anfield. I do a little round robin because a lot of the houses there have these big, amazing murals of all like players past and present. So all these great big graffiti murals on the sides of the houses. So I go and tick a few of them off and then I'm into the ground. it's Liverpool, Luton. You'd think it would be a no-brainer. Liverpool are ravaged with injuries. Like, we've got like so many youth players. I was joking to the lad next to me that I've probably seen like more first teamers play in the between season friendlies here in the US than I was witnessing that night, like in a Premier League game at Anfield. But we go 1-0 down in the first half, and I'm like, God, why did I come? This is my fault. I should just never have come. And it would have been fine. We're going to lose, and it would be all my fault for coming all the way from America. But we turned it half time, second half come out, and we turned it around. The atmosphere in the second half when Liverpool were attacking the Kop end was just enormous. Like the sound, there was nothing like it. The noise that stand makes when Liverpool, especially when Liverpool are attacking that end, is just like nothing. Nothing to behold up until that point in my life. And we turned it around, and it was 4-1 in the end.
Yeah, so you know, you didn't put a hex on them. That was that I like to say is the spirit of Liverpool just fucking with you, pal.
And it's good, and it means I can go back now.
Yes.
knowing that when I go away, they don't lose, you know.
So the interesting thing too is that I love how you thought that for a second you would curse them, despite the fact that since I've known you, every time you've seen Liverpool, it's been at Wembley and you've won, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that streak is going still.
It's going still, right? Strong,
as we'll get to the next bit of the story, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. So now take it. So now you win 4-1.
You win 4-1. I walk. I did. It's lovely. Can't leave out with the crowd at Anfield. And I walked actually back all the way from the ground back into the city. Just buzzing, you know, just like buzzing from the win, buzzing from the atmosphere. I get back down at the city, and the city is lively as well. It's a great, great city. All the bars and stuff have live music on like most nights. So you go and pass these bars, and like there's people like playing in there, a bit like Nashville or somewhere like that in that sort of respect, you know. There's a good vibe in the city. But then I was heading back the next day. And actually, I'm glad I packed all that stuff in on the first day, because I woke up the next morning and I had hoped to cram a load of stuff in on the Thursday morning before my train back to London. But it was just bucketing down with rain the next day. So I was like, wow, I'm glad I was early and I actually bothered to cram all that stuff in, because there's no way it would have been half as enjoyable in the rain.
Yeah, it was meant to be, man. It was meant to be. What was it like for you to be in such a hallowed ground like Anfield? And because when I think of incredibly historic and famous stadiums, and now I know everything is about new arenas and new this, and there's nothing wrong with new. New is great, especially like coming from someone that loves Italian soccer, where everything is old and fucking falling apart.
Yeah.
We can use all the new. But Anfield is one of those places that is just such a sacred, holy ground. And I'm saying this not even as a Liverpool fan. What was it like for you stepping foot in there for the first time ever?
It lived up to everything I could possibly have hoped it to be. Just hearing the crowd, seeing it. And even especially around, before you even get into the ground, just being around the ground is incredible. I love how like it's not in a giant parking lot off a highway, like so many stadiums here are, you know. Right. And
we're talking about you, MetLife. We're talking about you, host of the World Cup 2026 World Cup final.
I'll take real pubs over sitting in the trunk of a car any day, you know.
Yes, absolutely.
In a car, and like in like the asphalt in 100 degrees.
Oh my god.
So that was brilliant. The atmosphere was great. It was bigger than I thought it was going to be. Especially the one stand I was opposite, is the stand that they normally kind of film where all the camera crew are looking out. So you never see that stand so much on TV. That stand is huge. They put a whole, like, that's the one they really, they built up, and they put a whole new layer. There's three layers on that. and the stand and the Anfield Road end. The Kop is still small. They keep the Kop small on purpose because they fear if they put another tier on it, it will lose its atmosphere.
Wow. So now the Kop stand, correct me if I'm wrong, that's where the goal is, correct?
Like
that's
behind the goal, yeah.
Behind the goal. Okay. See, like, so this is where like you get lost in translation for a while, because it's like in Italy, like that's the curva, and then hence the name
podcast. Yeah.
But it's like, so now is the Kop stand, is that a term like solely unique to Liverpool, or is that
a few other I think Nottingham Forest have a Kop, Spurs might now have a Kop. I think the term is one continuous stand going up rather than broken into two.
Got you. Ears. Okay.
Or it's something to, like, or it's an old colloquial term for hill or something like that.
Got you.
But a few stadiums do have what they call the Kop. Liverpool is obviously the most famous one.
Well, you know,
I'm not just saying that. I think we all know. Come on, Forest fans, you know as well.
Seeing that famous stand and seeing that famous arena, and then of course, you know, you've got this team, and it's not the team, but it's not the team that, like, we saw the three-headed monster, as I referred to them as, with Sané, Firmino, and Salah, but it's still just as great. You are currently fighting for first place against Arsenal, with Manchester City breathing down your neck. It is literally anyone's league this season.
Yeah.
Knowing that it is Jürgen's last year, do you think that every single player there knows that, look, we might not be the Liverpool that won the Champions League a couple of years ago. We might not be the Liverpool that won the league in 2020 or 2021. But we have to make sure that we are the Liverpool that fights every single second of every single game.
I think it has made a difference. I wondered whether it would or not. And I was dubious about it when he announced. So he announced... when did he announce? January or something.
January,
like that.
Yeah, it was early.
Mid-season. And we were doing all right, and I wondered what effect it would have. I think it has, like, just judging by the way we played since the announcement, I think clearly it has had an effect on all the players, and not just the players, I think on the fans as well. Yeah. I think the fans are going mental every game and creating this great atmosphere and spurring that wave of momentum on for it to all happen for Klopp.
So I'm hoping that my Milan squares off against your Liverpool in the Europa League final. This is also a sentence I didn't expect to be saying in 2024. but I would love to see that. And I feel like Milan should put all of their chips into Europa League. We're clearly not going to win the Scudetto. Inter is too great this season. Mm-hmm. Despite their Champions League loss, I cannot still get over the fact that, like, they managed to crash out against Atletico Madrid. But the fact that, like, these two historic teams with this amazing rivalry could square off against each other, and again, in Klopp's final season, it could also very well be Stefano Pioli's final season.
Yeah.
So, and we know it's going to be Olivier Giroud's final season. He has reached a verbal agreement with LAFC. He's leaving Milan. So I'm sure, like, he wants to try and win something before he goes. This could be a very, very, very
tasty. It'd be good. We've got history in finals, obviously.
We do. We absolutely do. This is what I'm getting at, my friend.
Previous podcasts. It would be, if we got to the final, it would be his actual last final. It would be in Dublin. The final's in Dublin. So it's just going to be mad. Like, if, like, the atmosphere in that city would be amazing, like, incredible if that so turns out to be Jürgen Klopp's last game.
Because, correct me if I'm wrong, so many Irish expats that have moved to England are... you know, they're Liverpool fans, correct?
Yeah, Ireland, if you're in Ireland, and even if you're living in Ireland and you're Irish, chances are you're Liverpool or you're Man United. They're just like, those two teams rule the roost over there. So it would be incredible. And Liverpool's proximity to Dublin is so near. Right. It's like an hour ferry ride over or something crazy. So it's easy for all the fans to get over there. People would just come in without, you know, even if you haven't got a ticket, for the final, you're going to Dublin for the party. Just to soak up the atmosphere of the game being there. But we got to get there first. So, you know, we've already got the quarterfinals next.
That's right.
And I think we have Atalanta in the quarterfinals.
They're tricky, man. They are. They're so good. They are a team that could turn it up on a dime when they want. And, you know, I feel like at this point, and this is wild to say, but I actually feel that the Europa League quarterfinals moving forward feel a little bit more exciting than the Champions League quarterfinals, right?
Yeah. I've had a lot of fun following us in the Europa this whole season. And, you know, I think it's bode us well because obviously we had so many injuries and a lot of players had to step up for the league this season. Those players had a lot of game time this season from playing in the early rounds of the Europa League, whereas they wouldn't have got that if we had been in the Champions League this season. So I think it's steadied us well for our league campaign this season. The likes of Connor Bradley and, you know, sort of fringe players have had loads of minutes already. They're not coming in cold straight into the squad. They've been playing a lot already.
That's good. And that bodes well for, you know, the league. That bodes well for, you know, the future of this team. I will say this. I just also kind of find it funny that JetBlue here just announced that they're flying directly to Dublin. They announced it's St. Paddy's Day. So if both make it to the final, Frankie, you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
And we can do customs in the Dublin airport, so it's an easy trip back home. You know, we're happy going to see Mr. and Mrs. Malone.
I'm not ruling it out.
My bank account is ruling it out, but my spirit is not, and that's all that matters. But after Liverpool, you trek back to London, and then you got to see the Carabao Cup, where they played Chelsea, and it actually looked like Chelsea put up a fight. Like my Premier League side looked fucking pretty decent. First time all season, I couldn't believe it. But what was it like then, seeing the atmosphere go from Anfield, Liverpool home game against Luton Town, to a final at Wembley against a London side? You know, what did Liverpool feel like, the away team? Was it, or was it equal footing for both clubs?
It was equal footing. They split Wembley half and half. I was in the Liverpool end previously. When I've been at Wembley, I've kind of been in the corporate seats the way I acquired a ticket. This time I got tickets right in the Liverpool end. We were in the heart of it. We were down by the corner flag. The atmosphere was electric. I don't want to say Liverpool fans put the Chelsea fans to shame, but they kind of did a little bit. Again, we're running on, like, Chelsea fans, like, they haven't had much to cheer about this season. No. Liverpool fans are, like I said, they're riding this wave of, like, Klopp's final sort of big hurrah. The fans are just so up for it right now. They're so up for every game. And from the off, the songs were going, the songs were belting, like, people were cheering, people were going crazy. There was a great moment for me, which I loved, controversially. Liverpool fans famously don't like the English national anthem. And it was when it plays, then it's not like here, they don't play a national anthem before every game in England,
okay,
or every sporting event like they do here. But they do play it before a cup final. And so the English national anthem starts up, and all the Liverpool fans, it's just a wall of boos and hisses and, like, disdain. And it was, I've got to say, it was one of the most beautiful sounds I've ever heard in my entire life, and just to be there joining in with it and not having to feel worried or about the reactions of people, because everyone around you feels exactly the same. It was a beautiful, beautiful moment. And one of the highlights of my trip.
That's hilarious. And I also love the fact that it's so accepted.
Yeah.
Like, this is what the Liverpool fans are going to do. Because you could you imagine that happening in America? Because it's like, we saw the disgusting reaction to Colin Kaepernick just taking a knee. Megan Rapinoe takes a knee, and it's just like, she's called every name in the book. And
yeah,
Colin Kaepernick loses a career essentially over taking a knee. And it's like, y'all are booing and hissing. Was a member of the royal family present? Because I know, like,
I don't know. I can't remember if they were or weren't. I know the last time I went to the FA Cup final a few years ago, Prince William was there. And I've actually got the next day in the Daily Mail ran like front page headlines like disgust as Liverpool fans boo the future king. And I've got that newspaper framed up on my wall in my office. for anyone that doesn't know me, I'm not in at the royal family at all, and I revel in this kind of behavior.
It's okay. It's quite all right. I have no horse in that race. It is funny. It is an interesting thing. It's amazing having grown up in America with my grandmother. Loving my Sicilian grandmother, who I had recently on the podcast, who will be 91 this week. She loved Queen Elizabeth and Diana, and also her house is a shrine essentially to those two women.
Yeah,
so it's like I've kind of by proxy sort of grown up having to appreciate the Queen and Diana and the royals, and I do appreciate them. I could go either way. I don't care either way. but it is funny to see the reaction from people that have actually had been ruled under, and I hate using the term.
Yeah, I mean, the way I feel about it is like, you know, they got all this money and this privilege by birthright. So they, you know, they also get my hatred and disdain by birthright as well.
right.
I don't discriminate with my hatred for them. I hate all of them equally, whether they're born into it or they're married into it or they're divorced from it. It remains.
I love it. It's the hey man. It's the ultimate punk rock thing, right? You know, Joe Strummer taught us all of this. But so you hiss and boo at the game.
So that's the start of the game. Yeah,
it goes on. Overtime goal by Virgil van Dijk. Again, Chelsea had looked the best they had all season, but was it a nail biter for you in the stands as it was for me watching at home?
I didn't feel like Chelsea were very good. They had a good spell definitely for like the last 20 minutes of the second half where we started to look tired. We look quite in control. I don't know who your right back is. I forget his name now.
Changes every week. I don't even know who it is. Couldn't tell
you. He had a stinker. He had one of the worst games I've ever seen. Like, I think he was nervous. Every time the ball came to him, he had a sloppy touch and it would go out for a throw-in. Liverpool were playing well. It was kids, like I said. They were stepping up, especially Jurgen Klopp put a load of the young kids on towards the end. And it was like, well, you know, go and make a hero out of yourself. This is, you know, we got nothing to lose now.
Right.
If we win it, you're heroes. If we lose it, you know, we lost the game with teenagers. Not to say that Chelsea have quite a young team as well, to be fair, but
that's the narrative
everyone's going well with.
Yeah, but here's the thing: your kids are being trained by like a real manager, whereas our kids are being trained by someone who I considered to be a fucking charlatan. Yeah. So you know, there's a huge disconnect.
There's a huge difference, and I guess a thing with our kids is they come through the academy, whereas there's a lot more pressure on the Chelsea ones because they've been bought in for a lot of money, and there's all that. Anyway, I'm sat in the corner before it goes to extra time. There's a moment in the first half of extra time where the Liverpool fans start singing the "Ale Ale Ale" song,
right,
and it goes on for about, I would say, about 10 verses of it, 10 verses and choruses. It's not just like sing a lay, like it goes on and then there's another and it keeps going and it keeps going. And we're about 5 verses in and like my voice is going, but it's clear that this is having a huge effect on the stadium. It's taken over the stadium and the players are feeding off it. Chelsea are shrinking because of it. Chelsea fans are quiet. Like, you know, they like people like, it took on a body. That song took on a body of its own.
Wow!
And I think it really changed the way the game was going, because Chelsea had been on the ascendancy towards the end of like actual time. So Chelsea shrink, and they look like we'll play it out for penalties. Liverpool are going for it a bit more, and then it's like a minute left in the second half of extra time. It's like penalty. It's going to be penalties again. Like the last three finals between Chelsea and Liverpool have been penalties. And we get a corner. And Costa Simikas, he's coming over. He scored the winning penalty in the FA Cup final when I went to see him 2 years ago, actually. Costa
Simikas. FA Cup the final. Yeah. All right. Not, okay.
Yeah, it's Costa Simikas. He's got the ball. He's coming over to take the corner where we're sat at. And he's rallying the crowd. This is like, you know, probably the last kick of the game. He's rallying the crowd. We start going nuts again. Crosses it in. And Big Verge gets the header. And everything is just carnage. It's a proper blur. There's flares going off in the crowd. There's flares chucked onto the field. And then it goes back. And it goes to like, I think there's about another like 5 minutes get played. They have like 3 minutes of stoppage time in extra time. I don't know where they got that from. I can't remember if Kelleher made the great save. I think he made that before the goal, actually. The Irish goalkeeper who's stood in for Alisson Becker for the last couple of months, who's been absolutely like incredible. He kept us in the game and then that was it. And then, we lift the cup. Everyone's having a great time, and it's been a glorious sort of like trip end to end. Like it started with the win,
yes.
Ended with this like miraculous win. I fly back to the States the next morning.
Oh my God, it was the Frankie tour of Liverpool.
Yeah, my clock farewell tour. I sat in the stand. So I was with my nephew again, who's 17, and the two of us were together for the final we went to. He's had a great, I think he's had a better run at Wembley finals than me even. He's like, I don't think Liverpool have ever lost at Wembley. I don't think he's ever seen Liverpool lose. So he's the real lucky omen. Sammy Maloney, my nephew, he's the lucky omen.
Now time for a coffee break.
Curva Mundial is sponsored by Mod Cup Coffee in Jersey City. But you can get it anywhere in the world from modcup.com. Mod Cup, drink modern coffee. Use code MUNDIAL for 10% off your first order.
Now, before we end here, there are a couple questions about Klopp. And I don't want to make this all about Klopp, but he is such a figure that no one seems to dislike him. He's almost like an Ancelotti figure where everyone just respects him, loves him. Heavy metal football, the attitude, the tracksuit, the fucking shitty hat that he wears. But it's that smile. He's the only German that smiles. What is his legacy for you?
I think for me, he turned the club around. I think he was the most important thing to ever happen to Liverpool in my lifetime.
Wow.
Remember, like we were great in the 80s when I was very little then. Obviously, we've been bad since Kenny Dalglish left in 1990 or 91, I forget which year it was. And it's been stale and stagnant since then. I know we won the European Cup when Rafa came back in, but Rafa didn't really turn it around. And I think ultimately we were a bit lucky that year. We won it not being a great team, but had a bit of magic behind us. But Klopp turned the whole club around, made the club believe in ourselves again, brought great players in, was just a great, inspiring guy. I think in football, he's very inspirational. Out of football, I find him to be like a real true inspiration to me. I know this is going to sound corny, but it kind of helps me try and make myself a better person. I could think like, you know, he punches up, you know?
Yeah, no, I get it, man. I like that.
I think he's made us all fall in love with football again, you know, and the frustrations with football have gone. We've had a great time. We just had the best time of our lives with him in charge. Like, we really have.
I always feel, and I see it in press conferences, for him, it's, and I get this impression, and again, no horse in this race either, but I do, I am a huge fan of him. And he always seems to be the guy that puts the fans first.
Yeah.
And the players. And that you see it when he says it, you're charging X amount for, he takes the companies to task for charging so much for kits. The fan, you know, everyone, times are tough for everybody. He takes the league to task for too many fixtures on not only just the players. Fine, you want to pay, you know, all these guys this amount of money. That's a lot of games, but that's also a lot of people that need to put up money to watch these matches that are not just living in Liverpool, that are like yourself coming from around the world. Like this is becoming so much more expensive. You know, can we do something more about it? You see him talking, like he's extremely vocal when it comes to equal rights in the game. He's extremely vocal when it comes to investments. Where is your money coming from? What does this money mean? Where is, you know, he, in an era of dirty money and dirty politics and things that'll make you, it's going to be very, very difficult for me to never watch this sport, but there will be times where I get that bitter taste in my mouth. Like we saw it a few years ago with the talk of the
Super League.
Yes, the Super League. I can't remember the name. Yes, thank you. With the Super League, and it hurt. And then he was the first to be like, no, not having it. And again, like this is a guy that I would only dream that he would come coach at Milan one day.
I could see him at Milan. I'd love to see him at Milan, actually.
We could never afford him. But two, there is that bizarre connection of Redbird, the financial group that currently owns Milan, has a stake in Liverpool. There's connections there. So maybe, but again, I think he said he may never coach again. If he does, it'll be a while. And he's deserved it. I don't, because he's going out on, even if nothing happens this year, he still goes out on the highest of high notes.
Yeah, I mean, we have won a trophy. That's not.
You have won a trophy. Yeah, the season's still. We got a few weeks left. You know, we got 2 months left, and there's still a lot that can happen. But like, you know, he still goes out on a fairly high note. And
I think so.
What will it be like for you this summer? Will transfers matter to you, or will managerial pick manage more to you? Mean more to you?
The managerial pick is the big one, without a doubt. I think about that question you always ask at the end of your podcast, which ex-player would you ask the present, would you bring back to Liverpool? And if you ask me that question right now, the ex-player I would bring back would be Xabi Alonso in the managerial position at Liverpool this summer. I'd probably take him back as a player, to be honest. I think he kicks the ball pretty well around the pitch.
Guy is still in incredible shape. Like when you see him on the touchline for Leverkusen, he is still a crisp, perfect specimen of a human body.
That's brilliant. And he's gorgeous.
Yes. I'm like, what the fuck, man? Like, at least I gain a little bit of weight like every other player that becomes a manager. No. He's just like...
He looks great. He looks cool as hell.
Yes.
If I could have my wish come true for the summer, managerial-wise, it would be Xabi to come in. I think, I know he's had... he might be a bit of a one-season wonder in terms of what he's done so far. I do trust that he knows what he's doing. I also just think the fans would be straight behind him straight away. He'd have less to prove and find it tougher to get the fans on board. The fans will get behind whoever comes, I'm sure, but I think they'd really be behind Xabi because he's so beloved, you know.
Yeah, he's definitely a figure that should be there. But I think he's also now sort of been like, I don't think I'm going anywhere. It's weird. He might not, but he also might be playing it like, because you said he's cool. So he might just be playing it cool, like let the Leverkusen fans like chill out, everybody relax.
He's got a league to win before.
Yes, that's it. That's
what he's going to do, doesn't he? You know, Bayern probably have been more vocal about us as a club about it because they want to unsettle him, you know.
Right. They want him
to drop the ball in the Bundesliga. He could also be thinking, hey, look, I'll do a couple of seasons here and wait it out for Real Madrid to come in. Because right. He played for them as well. It was They're another big part of his career.
So let's just say he's the golden goose. That's in a perfect world. But could like a Steven Gerrard, is he ready to take the Reds?
I wish.
Yeah.
I wish. Nothing as disappointed me more than Gerrard not really doing it as a manager. I kind of like, he went up to Rangers, he won the league with them after 10 years without of them not doing anything. And I was like, here we go, Gerrard, gonna be him. And he came to Villa and he had a good initial splash with Villa. And then it didn't work out for him. And I don't know if he's got it. I definitely don't think he's got it now. I mean, he's manager in Saudi Arabia. I don't think he could take the mantle up. I think it would be a similar situation to Lampard going to Chelsea. If I'm honest, like they do it on the reputation of who he is, but not the reputation of what he does as a manager.
It's because the thing is, this has now become a job because Jurgen Klopp was so loved. It's almost become the most undesirable managerial job in football because, you know, it's almost like Sir Alex. It's not like Sir Alex in the sense of like, chill out, United fans. I know you're going to fucking come at me at Pitchforks.
It's bigger.
Come at Frankie at Pitchforks. I didn't say it. But it's like Sir Alex was, you know, class of 92 and building it up and making United this global.
Get a longer empire without a doubt, you know.
Built the empire and he's the king of that castle 100%. And you don't want that job after him because you're never going to, no matter what you do, you're never going to be him. In a shorter amount of time than Sir Alex at United, you know, Klopp at 9 years, that 9 years, as you said, turned everything around, made everybody fall again, this beloved figure, this cult of personality. But it's like, it's almost like you're set up to fail. It's a nerve-wracking thing. Yeah.
It happened with Ferguson. I think it happened with Wenger at Arsenal.
Yes, yes. Despite the fact that like every Arsenal fan wanted him out, and then
He did. I mean, Wenger overstayed his welcome a little bit. He wasn't great for a good few seasons towards the end there. I'm not going to get into having a go at Arsenal fans for now all of a sudden thinking he's their big hero and forgetting the fact that they all booed him and held their Wenger out signs. That's another story for another podcast.
Don't worry, Frankie, you're always welcome on the doors. But it's like when Zidane leaves Real Madrid, first off, he replaces Ancelotti, does it a great job, leaves, and then only to bring Ancelotti back. It's sort of like, oh, and of course there was another manager in between, but he lasted all of 15 minutes, so it doesn't even matter at this point. But it's like that was an anomaly, Zidane coming in and just basically, you know, doing what Ancelotti can do and again continuing on the Real Madrid way.
Yeah.
And the only other logical explanation after he leaves, who do you get? Oh, you bring Ancelotti back. You bring back a guy who is, you know, another golden goose.
Yeah.
Here it's like we're in a different world now almost when it comes to managers.
We are.
You know, it's weird.
I think going back to what we said about Alonso already is that he is cool as a cucumber. And that sort of demeanor might help coming into this sort of
100%.
Well, Ancelotti's cool as a cucumber as well. So he comes in unfazed by anything. I would worry more about like a live wire kind of character, like say De Zerbi or someone like that coming in. I think whoever comes in needs to be able to take this in their stride and not buckle under the pressure or something like that, you know?
So what you're saying is you do not want Antonio Conte to be managing.
I don't want Conte. Jose might do a good job, but you know he's managed United, so there's no way. But he could take on the reins, you know. But it would never happen. I don't think we want that to happen. I don't think he wants it to. I don't think it will ever happen. But he's the sort of character that could pull something like this off, you know.
Yeah, because he's a case study for a lot of people that, you know, love to study brains and sociological things. That is totally, speaking of punching above weight, that is totally not what I do. But he's someone that I could see him for the reasons why you said, but then I can also see him being like, no.
There's no way.
It's not happening.
But.
If anything, I see Jose Mourinho will either be back at Chelsea or back at United. No, but it'll be more back at Chelsea than anything else. I can't see him. I can't see him take a PSG job. I can't see him take maybe he could take the Bayern job if Alonso decides to not take that and says, look, I conquered Bundesliga. Yeah. I'm done here. I'm out. Let me go. Peace out, everybody. So I don't know, but it is a weird state because now I don't remember a time in football where we talked about managers and their idiosyncrasies and eccentricities so much as we do now.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's because of social media or the 24/7 news cycle. And I'm sure that all plays a role into it, but it's a rare thing to find the cool as a cucumber guy.
I know. Yeah.
Which is bizarre to me. It's so strange.
It was one of the classic manager tropes, I guess, wasn't it? And I guess the big names are few and far available right now. I don't know who else we'd go for. There's a lot of talk about this Ruben Amorim guy at Sporting.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know much about him, but I guess I don't know. Like it's kind of like all chips in the Alonso basket, and then panic, like deal with whatever else comes. But you know, let's get through this season first, and let's like enjoy Klopp the last couple of months rather than worry about what's coming after him. And if it all went downhill after Klopp left, I still had the best time of my life while he was there.
Love it, love it. Frankie, thank you so much again. Everyone, make sure you go listen to The Bugle Mondays on The Face Radio.
Mondays, 4 p.m. till 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 9 p.m. in the UK.
Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Curva Mundial Pod. Thanks for listening. Listeners, it's the missus. I have an announcement to make. My husband doesn't love me anymore.
That is totally not true!
Yes, it is!
I'm usually the dramatic one, but you're saying this because I ate the last bag of House of Macadamia nuts.
These are not just any nuts. These are the most luxurious nuts, and they're too good to resist. House of Macadamia are high in protein, vegan, paleo, and keto friendly.
Baby, I know you're bad and bougie, but don't worry. More are coming soon. I got us a subscription box.
You did?
It is not just us who can get this box. Curva Mundial listeners can subscribe to my personalized box and try their subscription service and see what I'm raving about. Farmers in South Africa get a piece of the pie. Macadamia nuts become more available, and you can taste and try different flavors and items. So just go to anchor.fm/curva-mundial and click on the link, which will take you right to my personalized box on House of Macadamia. And by ordering from Curva Mundial's special curated subscription box, you get 15% off and a free 4-pack of snack bars are also included.
That's great.
Even better, sales from Curva Mundial's curated subscription box on House of Macadamia also help fund this podcast. So everybody wins.
So all listeners have to do is go to anchor.fm/curva-mundial and click on the link, which will take them right to your personalized box on House of Macadamia?
Yep, and I did this all for you, because I love you, contrary to what you might think.
So you say.